There's a passage in the canon where the Buddha comments on one of his students, saying that this student practiced the Dhamma in accordance with the Dhamma and didn't pester me with questions related to the Dhamma. Sounds like he's saying that if you're really serious about the practice, you just shut up and do what you're told. But that's not the kind of teacher the Buddha was. In fact, he was very proud of the fact that he was open to questions. You said there were two types of assemblies, those trained in bombast and those trained in cross-questioning. Training in bombast meant that the teacher would speak in nice literary phrases, beautiful concepts, but would resist having any questions asked about what those concepts might mean. Whereas if you're trained in cross-questioning, if you hear a teaching and you don't understand, you ask, what does this word mean? What does that word mean? How far does this go? Because words and teachings have their range. Some teachings, like the Four Noble Truths, the teaching on being avid and developing skillful qualities and abandoning unskillful ones, those have a huge range. They're true and beneficial everywhere. Other teachings have a more limited range. You take the three perceptions. There are times when you apply them and times when you don't. When you're trying to develop skillful qualities, you don't say that all actions, because they lead to feelings, and feelings are stressful. Therefore, all actions must lead to stress. That doesn't help. When you're trying to decide what to do, you want to know which actions are skillful and which ones are not. So in a case like that, you put aside the three perceptions. So what's going on? I think a lot of it has to do with a principle that John Fung illustrated with a story one time. And John Fung was another one of those people who didn't like idle questions. But if he really had a problem, he'd be happy to answer. As I've said, he gave only a very few Dharma talks while I was staying with him in the 10 years. I could count the number of formal Dharma talks he gave on the fingers of two hands. But still, if you had a question, he could have a long, long answer in Dharma conversation. The important thing was that the question came from your practice. He told the story one time about when they're building the ordination hall at Sokodam. Originally, they assumed that, as with every other ordination hall in Thailand, the Buddha image would be on the western side of the hall, facing east. The same way that the Buddha was reputed to be facing east when the morning was awakening. And so they placed a cornerstone under where the Buddha image was supposed to be. They put lots of sacred objects, relics, Buddha images, copies of Dhamma, sealed it up in a concrete box. It was in the basement under the hall. It was in the crawl space under the hall. And then when they got further along in the construction, John Lee changed his mind. The Buddha image was going to be on the east side of the hall facing west. But all the Buddha images in Wanasukanam are on the east side of their respective halls facing west. John Fung said there was a meaning in that. Buddhism was going to go west. But when they finished the hall, someone realized that the cornerstone was now under a place where people would be stepping over it, which you don't do in Thailand. You don't step over sacred objects. So they pointed this out to John Lee, and John Fung happened to be sitting next to John Lee. And John Lee turned to him and said, okay, tomorrow, go on and get that moved. But John Fung's immediate reaction was, there's no way you can move that. It was concrete, firmly rooted in the ground. But he knew if he said so. And John Lee said, well, if you don't have the faith to do it, I'll find someone who does. So the next day, John Fung got everybody who was able-bodied down under the crawl space, which is all muddy. They had ropes, they had crowbars, they pulled, and they tried and tried and tried, and they couldn't budge the thing. So that evening, John Fung went back to John Lee, reported what had happened, and said, how about this? Suppose we made a new concrete box under where the Buddha image is now, and then break open the old concrete box and move all the sacred objects and put them in the new one. And John Lee was chewing betel nut at the time. He just nodded his head a little bit. Yes, that was that. John Fung told me this story, and then he said at the end, that's how you show respect for your teacher. And as a general principle, that's how you show respect for the Dhamma. You take it and make sure you've got the concepts as clear as you can. And then you practice it. And then if there are questions that come up in the practice, you think about how you might solve the problem so that you're not just going to take every problem to your teacher and say, please solve this for me. And then you show the teacher you've tried your best to think of your way through this. And if it's not good enough, then the teacher will be happy to provide you with new suggestions. But you've got to put up some effort yourself. Think of how the Buddha said that the Dharma is nourished. It's nourished through commitment and reflection. You take the instructions, you try them out, and then you reflect on the results. If they're good, you keep them up. If they're not good, well, what could be an improvement? How could you get them so that they would work? How do you adjust them to fit in with your circumstances? Try things out. It's only when you've tried things out and you come against sort of a brick wall, and then you ask questions. That way you use your ingenuity. I think I've mentioned that Ajahn Sawat used to like to make reference to John Munn's favorite Dharma topic. Actually, there are two topics. One was the customs of noble ones, but another one was this principle of practicing the Dharma in accordance with the Dharma, which means two things. One, you take the Dharma as it's given to you, as it's been passed down to us. You don't make changes in the Dharma just to please your defilements. But the other meaning is that you practice for the sake of disenchantment. You practice for the sake of dispassion. In other words, you aim high. Your desires in practicing the Dharma are noble. But then John Fuang's favorite words when he was teaching meditation were, one, use your powers of observation, and two, use your ingenuity. So it's not just a matter of doing as you're told, because you do as you're told and then you observe the results, and you have to judge the results. Are they going well or not? And if they're not going well, how could they go better? Think. Use your imagination. This is the skillful use of your imagination. You're not just inventing stories. You're trying to use your imagination to solve problems. You recognize what the problem is. Now that's all of the issue right there, is articulating the problem to yourself. And then trying to come up with answers. This way the practice becomes your practice. The Dharma is not just the Buddhist Dharma. It's the Dharma for treating the illnesses of your mind, solving the problems in your mind. That's what it's intended for. As the Buddha said, this is how you show respect for him. You take his Dharma for the sake of solving these problems in your mind. And you can't expect other people to solve them all for you. You can lean on their experience, borrow their wisdom for them every now and then. But you've got to learn how to develop some of your own, and this is how it's done. Put a teaching into practice and then look at the results. That's the principle the Buddha gave to his stepmother. You test the Dharma to see what kind of results happen when you practice it. Some Dharmas or some teachings, you put them into practice, and you realize that they're taking you to the wrong place. They get you entangled with other people. They increase your passion, get you fettered, make you lazy, make you burdensome. Okay, those kinds of things you've got to avoid. But some teachings, you got them from the source, you get them from the Pali Canon, put them into practice and they don't seem to work, then the question is, well, do you understand them? Try to figure things out. And if nothing seems to make sense, okay, then ask questions. Those are the questions that people like Ajahn Fung and Ajahn Sawat would be happy to answer. It's not that you don't ask questions, you do. It's not that you don't try to think outside the box, you do. It's just having a sense of the right time and the right place. And that comes with practice. So you commit yourself, then you reflect. And then based on your reflection, you commit yourself some more. That's how you practice the Dharma in accordance with the Dharma. As long as your aims are high, you're on the right track.